with tendon problems. So if we started to broach the question, if I just again threw it out to you, why do people break down? How can we start to consider that?
All right, well, I think the best way to look at it is to, I mean, what we're really asking there is what are the causative and risk factors for tendinopathy or tendon injury? And traditionally, they're broken up into extrinsic, so things that are acting from outside of the body like load, and intrinsic, so things that are acting from within our body like our genes and our flexibility, our strength and all that type of thing. That's a sort of traditional view. The way I like to separate them, I think this leads much better on to the assessment and the management of tendons, is by looking at, firstly, what I call load-related. So if we look at the body as a whole, the body as a whole will have load going onto it by the sort of activities that you're doing, the running and the jumping and the walking, whatever it might be. So that's the first level. So on a whole body level, that body's been loaded, and then the second load level is the attenuation of that load by the different body segments. So here we're talking in the lower limb about the kinetic chain, so all the way from the ankle to the knee to the hip and up into the back. How is that load attenuated by our strength and flexibility? So that's the second level that we look at. And then the third level is looking at a tissue level. So on a tissue level, how is that tissue placed to then take that load that it ends up with after it's been attenuated? So you take the initial sort of body load, then some of it's attenuated by other areas, some of it will end up at that tendon, and it might be the tendon that you're treating in your patient in that particular day. And how is that load at that tendon able then to be sufficiently sort of leading to biochemical processes that lead to adaptation in that tendon? So for example, if you've got someone in front of you that is fit and healthy, or if you've got someone that could be overweight, if you've got someone that has other comorbidities like lipid problems, elevated cholesterol, perhaps a genetic predisposition. So are they in a sort of state where that tendon is not going to be adapting as effectively as someone else? So they're the sort of three levels that I tend to look at. So look at your patient and ask yourself, the load that's going through that tendon, A, how is that load being attenuated, B, and C, how is that tissue then able to cope with the load that it ends up with? And then you can start to think to yourself why that tendon is breaking down. So that tendon for any individual will break down because of a combination of those factors. So for example, if I take an example of an elite athlete, so say you're looking at Premier League footballer with patellar tendinopathy, the main driver for that person will be load. So it will be the first one, the amount of load they're putting through their body, because obviously they're training 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week. They may have elements of the second one, so attenuation of load. Often you'll find issues with, even in elite people, you'll find issues with their flexibility and strength that can be improved. But they may not have as many systemic issues. So you wouldn't expect an elite footballer to have, lipid levels or hormone issues or something else. Whereas if you look at the example of a sedentary Achilles patient, you're looking now at someone who is more at the other end of the spectrum. So you're looking at someone who has a tissue that is unable or less able to adapt to load because of comorbidities, because of their general health, because they might be deconditioned. And it might not be a case of them putting a lot of load through their body. It might be more a case of breakdown because of the tissue not being able to cope with the relatively smaller amount of load that's going through it. So I think that sort of classification is what I build on a lot when I talk to people and when I lecture, because I find it much more useful in terms of separating different tendons and in terms of then looking at people differently and treating them based on how they present.
And when you say, with respect to that, Pete, that classification, is that something that you've developed through your experience and through just the work that you've done, or is that from somewhere else? Is that widely used, that sort of classification system or that clinical reasoning approach?
Pretty much, it's more something that I've developed myself, and we're writing it up with a couple of people. So we're writing it up, we're writing it up into a sort of clinical publication, because I don't think the traditional view of, right, let's look at someone and say, have they got extrinsic risk factors or have they got intrinsic risk factors? I'm sure everyone's heard of those before, because we talk about them with, you know, patellofemoral, and we talk about them with, you know, back problems, and with, you know, all sorts of things in medicine. But I don't think that is a very useful one when it comes to management. Because as a physio, what I look for in a patient is how can I modulate or change the load that is going through that that tendon and that system. I can't change the systemic factors. So I can't change, well, I can. I can make someone fitter. I can make someone fitter who's very unfit, which will improve their systemic potential to heal, but that's difficult. That involves a big, big buy-in from the person. What you're after as a physio and what I think we work on is trying to modulate their attenuation of load, so their strength, their flexibility, and their biomechanics. And then on top of that, trying to change or guide them in terms of how much of the, you know, sporting load they put through. So that's sort of, I think, much more useful, I find, than just looking at this whole sort of, you know, long list of extrinsic factors and intrinsic factors and thinking, oh yeah, fine, but how does that help me as a physio? Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. In my mind, as you talk there, and just looking at that list, it creates more of, commonly from my experience, people ask questions and it's about finding out, you know, what's wrong with the tissue and what tissue is affected, whereas that, it kind of lends more towards why, you know, why is this tendon broken down? What are the factors maybe within the tendon? What are the local and regional anatomical or biomechanical factors, but also what's happening outside? Yeah. What's the, you know, what's the quality of that tissue? What's the state of that tissue? What's the state of the body that tissue lives in?
Yeah, exactly. It goes, so you're going right from a sort of body approach down to a kinetic chain approach, right down to the tissue approach, as you say. So it's it does sort of lend itself then to, you know, be adapted to your assessment and everything else.
Just as Pete, I was just going to ask, just thinking that through, using that classification, Do you find that helpful in presenting it to patients? Because I can, in my mind, it's almost like you could more easily communicate a shared responsibility. And if you say, well, look, I can change this, but if we think this is a major factor, then I can't change that. You need to change that in terms of the patient.
Absolutely. Like so we're getting on to treatment here, but it's really interesting, so we'll continue. But all of my deconditioned, you know, end of the spec, you know, older deconditioned type patients who need to improve their healing sort of tissue environment. With all those people, the first thing I do is sit them down and say, right, you've got to start thinking about, you know, changing that systemic healing environment. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter. You can have the best physio in the world. You know, you can do eccentric training, you know, for a year and a half with as Alfredson would, with, you know, a million kilos on your back, you're still not going to get better, because that tendon is not in its tissue environment where it's going to heal. And that is the thing with these people, and that's why they're so difficult. So definitely I think it does then sort of, you know, put the onus on them to think about some of the things that they might have to do. But I've had really good success with people who would buy into that and then go and, you know, improve their fitness. And one of the things we're looking at research-wise is incorporating aerobic exercise into studies alongside tendon loading for these people.
Interesting. With respect to the systemic side, would that be? Or would that be, yeah, I suppose, well, you are loading as well, and you're looking at the load attenuation.
Yes, exactly. So someone with lipid problems, for example. So you get someone who's like a typical 45-year-old Achilles, male, a bit overweight, starts to run again. They might have slightly elevated lipid levels. If they get fitter, and what I mean by fitter is probably reduce their BMI and aerobically fitter, they'll be much better at. They'll be much more able to overcome their Achilles issues. And that's the sort of sort of message that you want to get across to them.
That's really interesting. With and when you say, oh sorry, no, I'm going off topic now. I find these things fascinating. One thing that I'd written down, Pete, where we started was looking at these causal, looking at these risk factors, and again where you summarised things nicely in terms of the three areas that you look at. Going back to what we talked about before in the first webinar, how do these fit in? Thinking towards a reactive tendon and a degenerative tendon. Would that be? I'm just wondering if that might be useful for people just to contextualise.
Definitely. Because I think one of the things that I get asked a lot is, so what's the time course and how do you progress from reactive to degenerative? And you know, because people have this idea that when you first break down, when a tendon first breaks down or first breaks down, that it must be a reactive tendon. And I think the important message to get across is that you can have a reactive tendon that typically reactive tendons have a shorter history. So you might, you know, go for a run and you're reactive the next day. And that's a typical reactive history. The next day it flares up and it's flared up for days. And remember that sort of the main differentiating question is how many days of pain do you have after your tendon loading activity? But you can also equally have a degenerative tendon that has been painful for a week or two and is behaving as a clinically degenerative tendon. Now remember, that just means that the pain is more stable. So the pain is not as likely to be lasting for days after their run or after they do their training. So that's the only difference. So the time course really is very, very muddied and doesn't help us at all in terms of identifying what phase someone is in. So someone can break down based on all the reasons that I've sort of talked about, the body, you know, the body load, the attenuation of load in the care chain, and then finally the systemic factors. They can break down with all those reasons, for any of those reasons or any combination of those reasons, but they might break down and be in either a reactive or degenerative phase. And that may depend on their past history, on how old they are, on a number of other factors. So it does get complex, but the take-home message is when someone presents, even if they present with a very short history, don't assume that it's reactive. The causative factors are the same. The causative factors for reactive and degenerative and, you know, what the reason why people break down are the same, effectively. But whether they break down in a reactive or in a degenerative phase depends on, you know, a whole host of other things, and it can be either if it's short term, even if it's short term. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. It does. I can probably hear anyone listening to this, and the question comes up in my mind is, oh, well, how on earth do we tell them? What do we do? I realise this isn't the place to, in one sense, give all the answers. It's to put some little snippets across, but it does kind of leave that, which I'm sure isn't always an easy question to answer. But it does leave the question, well, how do you know? And I don't know whether that's something we want to sort of pick up in the future. I guess it's something that you discuss more.
Do you mean how do you know what phase they're in?
Well, where you said, saying with respect to the time scale, someone could present, they could be reactive, they could be degenerative, and so the time scale isn't a good factor in deciding which one they sit in. Because I'm guessing, well, whilst we haven't talked about treatment, I'm guessing we're going to treat a reactive very different from a degenerative.
Absolutely, absolutely, without a doubt. The treatment is completely, completely different, which is why it's important to differentiate them. But I think I come back to the very simple clinical tip of just differentiating based on how irritable they are. Amount of symptoms. I mean, I say it quite clearly and quite sort of, you know, I say it quite, you know, straightforwardly here, but it's not straightforward, obviously, in the clinic. So you might have someone, I'll give you an example. Someone comes in with a tennis elbow who's a hairdresser and is in constant pain. Now, is that constant pain because they're doing their aggravating activity every day and then the next day it's sore? Or is that constant pain because they're reactive? So it's difficult to sometimes tease out irritability after tendon loading if someone's doing tendon loading every day. So it does get, in the clinical picture, I talk about this in a lot of detail on the course and it becomes clearer, but it's not as straightforward as asking someone, how many days are you sore for after loading.
I hear that. Well, I think that's, again, certainly for me, the having that classification, I like that. I really like that because it's, and for me, certainly personally, the one thing that comes out is that communication with the patient and being able to make it a much more collaborative experience, but also for forcing clinicians and people to it answers the why question. You're thinking, why is this tendon broken down, as opposed to, well, you've got an Achilles tendinosis, or it's helping those explanations. So having considered why people, if we started out with the question, why do people break down, I think we've got some great insights there. And of course, as is always the way with a good discussion, it leaves us almost with more questions than we started out with, which is good and exciting. But just to say thanks so much for your time, Pete. I really, really appreciate it.
No worries, take care.
Bye-bye now.